Hello.
All right. About that time. Welcome to the 13th of January, Aries B working call in 2021. The previous call was recorded, not this one. I didn't update that. Okay, so please mind the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. The attendees list is available if you'd like to add your name. And there's the link in the chat to the agenda page if you have any adjustments or changes that you want to make. Is there anyone new today that has not attended before and would like to introduce themselves? All right. Any announcements? I should probably put IW on here. It just felt a tiny bit early. Any other announcements that we ought to be sharing with the group?
Since you mentioned IW, I'll mention the other event that I'm putting on. And I know that this has come up a tiny bit in this world. The Thoughtful Biometrics Conference that was going to be the first week of February got moved to the second week of March. So it's still happening. It's thoughtfulbiometrics.org. And what we're doing is bringing together biometric scientists, folks like our community that work on digital identity, and civil society advocates to talk about the appropriate uses of biometrics and inappropriate uses of them. So it's March 8th, 10th, and 12th. It's the Monday, Wednesday, Friday of that week. And it's thoughtfulbiometrics.org is the URL.
Awesome. Thanks, Kalia, for that. My brief snarky response was that I hope you're not using my thought patterns as biometrics or something. That would be entertaining.
No,
that's not what you mean. No, that's awesome. Very cool. Any other announcements? All right. Related meetings. I will share the DIDCOM working group. We are actually was only partially able to attend, but we talked over a bunch of issues and things this week, which was awesome. Making good progress on that, also preparing for what we're going to be presenting at the DIF face-to-face, which is a week ago yesterday. So a week from yesterday is that, and we'll be doing that. One of those things that we'll be gradually doing there and expanding as we go forward is more outreach that is DIDCOM focused. So if you're interested in helping with that, please head over to that group and your help would be appreciated. Other meetings that we want to report on?
Yes, so this is the on week for the Identity Implementers Working Group. And so for those that are new on the call, this is where we try to go over a lot of different happenings that are things that are happening in the SSI community. And for our presentation this week, I've invited Patrick Stas to come and give us an overview of the IndyScan project and how that can be used to help monitor the health of Indy-based ledgers.
Thank you, Steve. Steven, I see you typing on the IndyDid method.
Yes, very sparsely attended, but really good meeting on Tuesday about generating DID docs from NIMS and ATRIBS, which are transactions on an Indy network, with the a couple of things being this trying to figure out the balance between do we have many smaller ATRIBS and how do they contribute and generate into a single DID doc or just one? And then also an idea came up of extending out the NIM object to be a DID controller, so you could actually have multiple keys in it, so you could so eventually supporting multi-sig control of DIDs. So super interesting discussion around that, and we're getting closer. The HackMD document that we've been using has been updated to have most of the questions that we've resolved included in it, and getting closer to actually moving that to the repo, the spec repo. So lots of progress being made there.
Very cool. And any updates to indie contributors?
We're getting good progress on Indie Node and Indie Plenum CI/CD pipeline, which is our big urgency right now. BCGov has allowed Ian Costanzo to work on that for a while, and so he's going to be a regular force in that. And we're hoping a couple of other contributors, and then Wade and Kevin, who have been working really hard on things, are making good progress. So we now have a CI pipeline for Indie and Plenum that works pretty reliably, and now working more on the CD pipeline is where we're moving. So next call is next week.
Very cool.
Oh, as well, I should also mention that ABSA has volunteered to do GitHub Actions CI/CD pipeline improvements to the Indie SDK. And so that they've started that work, and they're working on it as a separate effort as well. And there is an Indie SDK release candidate. And at this coming contributors meeting, we'll probably make the decision that that will be or won't be the next release of the Indie SDK.
Awesome. Lots moving there, and that's good to see. All right. Releases and work updates. Test Harness, we're putting you on the spot a lot today, Stephen.
We now have the CI pipeline running with ARIESFramework.net and Akapai in different combinations on a daily basis. Now, instead of a test failing indicating a failure of the suite, what we're doing is comparing the results from that are checked into GitHub with what ran that day, so that if anything changes, we'll be notified, either a new test passed or a test that had previously been passing fail. So we'll get notified when things change, as opposed to just always seeing, always having to only include passing tests. So this makes it more transparent what's changing between them. Continue to work on the ARIES framework back channel, and lots of work on getting DID exchange tests and out of band working, so that those become the dominant set of tests. So we're leading towards AIP 2.0 compatibility there. That's the main stuff.
Very cool. ARIES shared libraries.
Yeah. So they were contributed by BCGov to Hyperledger last week, the two that hadn't been. So Indie VDR was a while ago. Indie shared RS, which includes CredX and on-cred support and related crypto packages. That has now been moved to Hyperledger, and then ARIES Askar, the ARIES level storage component, has been moved to Hyperledger. Andrew did a talk the other day about performance and what he's seeing in the sort of apples to apples test, and there's some really interesting and really good results. One of the things this breakup does is it Indie SDK had a shared queue, which meant every request, regardless of what shape and flavor of request, went through a common queue everything went through the same bottleneck. That opens up, so that's going to help regardless. But the some of the numbers Andrew gave on ARIES Askar, all of them much better, but some of them orders of magnitude better for things like scanning the database and things like that. So really interesting stuff there.
Very cool. And this might be bleeding into the Akapai update, but any updates on the working Akapai branch being Askar based and plans for that to be moved into master?
So it's there, but it will be a post 060 merge. So the branch is there and it's there to be played with, but we'll do the merge following it. One of the things Andrew's working at is making sure that all of the artifacts coming out of the CI/CD pipeline from the various projects are there in all the forms you would need them. So, and that's necessary for making sure we have a good way to produce the ACAPI release using those artifacts. So, and generally we want to put all of the goodness that's in ACAPI out as soon as possible in the next, I'm hoping in the next week or so, the 0.6 release will come out with the items you see listed in the there on the screen. And then as well, I wanted to highlight there's in progress things going on, persistent queues. The first Kiva brought in a developer to work on that, Chris Adams, and he's got a first implementation of persistent queues using Redis as a PR submitted this morning. So looking forward to getting reviews on that. Out of band is continuing to be evolved. And then Stephen Klump has started working on credential exchange version 2. So all of these will follow up the 0.6 release that's just in final prep.
Very cool. And we have a discussion topic later about that PR that he, or a PR that he submitted against those RFCs. So very cool. All right, Aries Framework, go. I don't see Troy. Anyone want to volunteer? All right. I don't know that I see Jack. Anyone from the .NET team? The framework.NET. All right. Other projects that people want to talk about?
I should say something about the mobile app code base that we have at Kiva. We think it's ready to serve as a functional replacement for the Ozma app that hasn't been updated in a while. So we are starting to reach out to and talk to folks who were active in the Ozma project to figure out what we can do to have an upgrade to that code base so that that code is more widely available and easily buildable by others in the community.
Fantastic. All right. Appreciate everyone's work. There's a lot that goes here and not all of it is reported. We're grateful for all that gets done and contribute to the community. On our agenda, first we're going to, this was scheduled for last week, but Daniel Bloom's internet was not happy with him. And so he is on today and he'll talk quickly about the mediator being hosted by Indicio for community use. We have two sets of things. They overlap a little bit. We have a discussion about the AIP next. But before we do that, I have these slightly out of order. I wanted to address issue 580 as it relates to the Stephen Klump's PR for issue credential V2. And he's got some feedback now that he's building on stuff. So that's what I had on the agenda. We'll probably do 580 first. And then dive into the AIP next discussions, and then make sure that we hit 577 as a PR as part of that discussion, which I expect to happen. Any adjustments we should make to the agenda before we get going? All right, let's do it. Daniel, can I hand this over to you?
Sure. So while I get this shared. So I think some of this is old news for a lot of you guys, but Indicio has been collaborating with SICPA and working closely with BCGov to add coordinate mediation support to ACAPI. And as kind of a culmination of that work, we as Indicio wanted to get a public mediator out there available for anybody to use to try to reduce the barrier to entry for developing things like mobile wallets, or just bypassing firewall issues and those kinds of things to get your agent to communicate with the outside world. So I've prepared a very brief demonstration. I don't want to take too much time, but I have two instances of ACAPI running, and I'm using the toolbox to talk to them. And I will show how we can use Alice, or rather use the public mediator to allow Alice to talk to Bob through that mediated connection. So in order to have a mediated connection between Alice and Bob, Alice must first have a connection with the NDCO public mediator that we have running. So I'll jump into the connections. And then this is the site. Oop. That was weird. Uh-oh, hold on. There we go. This is the site that we put up there that has the invitation for connecting to the public mediator. So I'll go ahead and copy that and paste it into the toolbox, or into Alice's instance of the toolbox here. And we now have a connection to the mediator. Then we request mediation from the mediator, which takes just a moment. And now we can see that we have a granted mediation request with the NDCO public mediator. So using that mediated connection, or that connection to the mediator, man, we can now create an invitation for Bob, specifying the NDCO mediator, create that invitation, copy that URL, paste it over here. And in just a second, we will see that we have a completed connection between Alice and Bob through the NDCO public mediator. So normally during these testing scenarios, a good way to check whether there's actually mediation going on, a fast way would be to turn off the mediator, try to send a message and see if messages flow. But since this is a public mediator and we don't want to be turning it off and on all the time, I'll just quickly open up a toolbox connection to the mediator actually, and I can show that we have a new route from the Alice connection created just a minute ago. And this is the routing key, or the recipient. Hold on, let me get this right. This is the key that the mediator uses to know that when a forwarded message from Bob arrives for Alice, that it should be sent on to Alice. So there we go. This is free to use. It's available. It is intended for development purposes. So with that in mind, we ask that you don't necessarily put a production build going on or anything like that. But we want this to be as useful as possible for developers of agents. So if you have suggestions or comments, please let us know. And we will also do our best on kind of just a best effort basis to keep it running smoothly. And we will also do our best to be in contact with those that are using it if there's any planned downtime or anything like that. So yeah, and again, big thank you to BCGov for dealing with all the code that we've been pushing into ACAPI, and for the support over the holidays, especially as we worked to get the NDCO public mediator put out there. So yeah, I think that's all I've got.
Awesome. Thanks, Daniel. Any comments or questions? Daniel?
Yeah, I have a question. Can you do it so that the NDCO mediator is the mediator for both parties or only for Alice?
You can do that. Yeah. So if I, in that scenario, had told Bob to connect to the mediator as well and then accepted the invitation while specifying the mediator, it would have also been able to set up mediation on its side as well.
Cool. This is awesome. I love it. Good job, guys.
And to clarify, that it's a protocol specific. We're using ACAPI for the in the toolbox for the sort of the client demo, but there's nothing specific to that working that is different than the protocol. So if you support the protocols, then it will work.
Yeah.
And to be clear, we're talking about RFC 011 route coordination, right? As it is,
yes.
As it is right now.
It's the mediator coordination is what it's called, yeah. But the RFC is named route coordination. The protocol name is actually mediator coordination. So that probably ought to be fixed, but yes, that's the, that's what it's supporting. And the support in ACAPI, there was support for mediation coordination previously to that, but it was off of a much earlier version of the RFC. And so it's been updated to what's actually in the RFC at this point.
I'll also call out that I used the toolbox to demonstrate this flow here. So I didn't have to copy and paste IDs around inside of the admin API, for instance, but this is in the admin API for Akamai. So if you have a controller connected to it, you can set up this flow to work in exactly the same way. I also could have used the toolbox directly to demonstrate mediation. So I could have connected to the mediator from the toolbox and then have the connection between the toolbox and Alice, for instance, be mediated. That is also another flow that I could have demonstrated, but chose to go this way. So yeah, lots of different ways you can use it, of course. Yeah, any other questions?
That's really cool. I gotta say, that's pretty awesome. I want to get that put into our set of, you know, demos and you know, things that people can easily spin up, developers can spin up and use and try out, because I think that's a huge enhancement to what we've got. Nice work.
Absolutely.
One question. I think I saw an invitation encoded there in the demo. Is that an out-of-band invitation?
The invitation is currently just a connections invitation. This is a
connections protocol
item of work that we have for the Akamai coordinate mediation support, which is to add support during the connection flow, or rather for the did exchange and out of band protocol flows, to send the correct key list updates to the mediator in order for a mediated connection to result. But at this time, we only have the connections protocol.
So we've got a developer on out of band right now. So if it helps to provide requirements, that would be useful. I understand you guys don't have that much time. You can work on it, but at least if you could come up with, okay, here's what we need for that, we might be able to include that in the out of band work that Shanjot is working on.
It should be a pretty straightforward modification. It'll do it. Essentially exactly what's going on in the connection protocol at the moment, just keeping track of when new keys are created and making sure that they're sent to the mediator when appropriate. So,
okay, good.
Daniel, have you created a ticket for that in the Akamai repo?
I have not yet. Another item that would be really useful that we would like to see done in the near future is a demo on this and some more documentation in the Akamai repo, so we can start having some of the questions that keep on popping up in Rocket Chat have a definitive source of truth for that. But that is still pending at this point, and we're hoping to have that soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Daniel, for that. Next on the agenda, did I do this right? I may not have. I thought I did. Can you see my screen here?
Yeah.
Oh, there it goes. It just took a second to update. The green box indicating that I was sharing didn't come up. Okay, next on the agenda is issue 580. This was opened by Stephen Klump and suggests some differences or some adjustments to the issue credential protocol. There is a pluralize and a rename from proposal to preview. So commentary on this?
Yeah, so just briefly, it's the preview was the one I was worried about. And I thought he was actually suggesting we change the entire message to preview. But what he's doing is simply, it was called preview in V1. And so he's just saying the attachment should remain preview. As opposed to changing the name of the attachment. So it's relatively minor. And I think it should be merged personally, because I think it aligns better with V1 and makes it easier for those migrating from that. But I wanted to make sure that those who have already done, if anyone's done V2 issue credential, and that they get to weigh in. And the filters one, the pluralization totally makes sense. I think that was just missed.
Right. So I think this one is pretty darn uncontroversial, just to pluralize it to indicate that it's a list here.
Yeah.
And then let me clarify. It used to be credential preview, and then this one had changed it to credential proposal, and we're just realigning it with what it was in the V1 official credential. Okay.
Yeah.
They merge this.
So this is George. So it's an easy change. I can't say much about the change from proposal to preview, but I am curious about the filters one. I don't know if there are any, I don't know what motivated that one. Is it just the desire to reflect the fact that it's an array?
Yes.
Yeah.
So yes. I just want to note that I don't think we've agreed on conventions for this. And I always hesitate when we have changes such as this one that seem to stem out of personal preference. If you guys take a look at, for instance, the out of band message, the service array, it's not pluralized. It's just a single service name. So just wanted to point that out.
The attachments RFC suggests that when you have attachments that are an array that you should pluralize it, but it doesn't go beyond the attachment thing. So I think George's larger point remains true. We should think about this and decide if we want to have a convention or not. But this is aligned with the examples in the attachment RFC.
Sounds like there could be some cleanup of the out of band to follow the same sort of pattern if that's what we want to pursue.
And I note, I just checked in all of the other messages in issue credential have pluralized, are pluralized. That's the only one that's not. I mean, we're never going to get all of these right, or it'd be miraculous if we did. I think the intention would be that arrays are pluralized so that we should try to do it. And where it's been accepted, we particularly don't push on it. Like there was no array at all in the V1. The V1.1, I believe, had the attachment. So, and it never got accepted. So since this is still in proposed, I kind of lean to it, but I'm not, like, I would have thought that one would have been a no-brainer, but I get what you're saying, George. I mean, it's, but we're never going to get them 100% aligned. It's just too easy to miss an S here or some other convention.
So
we
have an RFC. I think it's 74. That's about DIDCOM best practices. And it has a little bit of information in it about like data types in DIDCOM message fields and naming conventions for certain kinds of data. This might be one where if we wanted to make a decision about generally we like pluralized names for lists, if we wanted to do that, or if we explicitly wanted to say, no, that's not a convention, we maybe ought to update RFC 74 to put in a sentence or two.
Yeah.
Other thoughts, oppositions to merging this? Again, it's not a functional difference. It's a sort of a semantic difference.
Yeah, I think the only objection we'd want is for somebody who's already implemented it, and it's a burden to switch because it is just kind of a minimal. So, you know, unless you've implemented it, stay quiet.
You got to show up with proof of code as a badge. I like that.
Which I think means George is the only one that's allowed to comment.
I think you are.
So we've implemented this. Like I said, it's an easy change, but I'd like us to, I see your point, Stephen, that it could be missed, but at least if we have an agreement for a convention written down somewhere, we can point to that instead of pointing to, I don't know, someone's opinion.
I also fully agree with that view. That seems like it would be a relatively minor update to the appropriate RFC.
So is someone taking the that action item of writing down that convention? It's not terribly, you know, high up in the priority list, but would be a nice to have.
It's also easy.
Yeah.
I will take that one.
Steven.
Attachment status.
Awesome.
Not just attachments, but any array gets an S.
Unless it's an array of fishes, but let's not bring that up. Okay, so sounds good. Any other commentary on this issue? All right, so I think, George, you'd volunteered to lead a discussion as part of the AIP discussions today. Is that correct?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, that's a yes.
Okay. Why don't I then hand this over to between you and Steven, and we can continue to drive those AIP conversations forward. In here is 177, and I'm assuming that's going to come up in the conversation. Is that the plan?
So Steven and I haven't really coordinated around this. I just have this proposal. And yeah. He asked me to chat about it in this call. So,
what I've got is a little presentation that goes over all of the under consideration and on the DIDKEY and JWE questions. I just point over to George. So I think we're coordinated on what we're saying. George, do you have anything on that? The second one that's
JWE?
Yeah.
I have not prepared for it for this call. They do have some underlying common motivators, those two. I can attempt to answer any questions.
Okay.
I do have some questions when we get there, but George, why don't I hand it? Do you want to drive? Do you want me to drive? What's the best way to do this? Do you want Steven to drive?
Steven, how do you want to do this? Okay, so maybe I just start with the self-encoded keys topic. All right, let me share. Here we go. All right, do you guys see my screen? Hello?
Yes, we do. Okay. Sorry.
Oh, okay. But do you guys see self-encoded keys? Just one screen, right? Zoom is not.
Yep, we see the slides.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because I have multiple monitors, and it's one of my my fears that the other screens might be shown. Anyway, right. So this is going to be a brief chat. I don't think it's going to take longer than 30 minutes, including any conversations that people might want to bring up. I know Daniel Hartman wants us to share some thoughts. Anyway, so this topic here is about how we are encoding what we call quote unquote naked keys. There are some instances in some of our protocols where we are interested in at the protocol level in sending the actual key value in the message itself for processing. Here's an attempt to evolve us a little bit more towards a place where we can actually solve a couple of issues that I'm going to talk about briefly here. Right. So, what do we have today? We have the DIDKEY method. Actually, let me, we have the DIDKEY method, which I've linked to there, and it's still in draft status. It does not demonstrate much evolution. Every time I look at it, it's almost the same. But basically, It is a DID method that under the hood just reuses multi-codec and multi-format, which are agreed upon ways to encode and format any sequence of bytes, essentially. And they're based on agreed upon identifiers to identify the contents of whatever it is that you are codifying. I've linked to the two tables there. So what happens when they're used in DID key is that, let's say you want to encode a key of a specific type. You just basically run it through the multi-codec and multi-format functions, so to speak, and then you come up with this, something that looks like this, which is base 58 encoded representation of a key. In this case, it's an ED25519 key, I think. And then the DID key method just prepends that value with this prefix, DID key. And then what is supposed to happen is that a DID key resolver, once it sees this, it expands that into this. By the way, please excuse me, this presentation was drawn up with a certain level of haste. If you look here, a DID key resolver should resolve into a DID document that looks like this, where you can see we have an ED25519 key in the in this section here, public key. This example is out of date. There is no longer a public key section in the DID core spec, but the overall point remains. So you have a DID key, you have a key here, and I don't recall the DID key method spec having any normative text around whether an ED25519 key must have the DID document for an ED25519 key must have a key agreement section for its corresponding curve 25519 key. What happens is it's sort of a convention where for the DID key method where you can resolve an ED25519 key encoded this way into a document that also contains its curve 25519 key. This works for these two particular key curves because there is something called a birational equivalence between those two curves. I am not a cryptographer nor mathematician, so don't ask me any specifics. That's just a term I keep seeing when I did some research about this. There is some sort of mathematical equivalence between these two curves. So that's why it works. That's why you can encode these two keys with a single identifier. So that's cool. So then Aries, us folks, this community, at some point we came up with RFC 0360. We say, hey, let's use DID key. We can now encode naked keys in a lightweight format that also tells us what key types they are. We also, as you see here, we have the types encoded as ED25519 and X25519, which is great. It's definitely a step up from what we had before. Conveniently express these two key types with a single identifier. So that's useful when you want to keep your messages small. Just with this single identifier, as I said, you're expressing both keys. And And so we just went ahead and made some changes to the existing RFCs that we had. And I think new ones, such as out of band, that have come up since. So what we did was this is not a good example. I pasted here the wrong example. So out of band invitations, let me see, I have it somewhere here. Okay. So out of band invitations now look like. So we don't have an example here of an out of band invitation with an explicit. Ah, yeah, here it is. Sorry, my mistake. I just copy pasted the wrong example. So my point is, out of band messages are using did key as this, like so. Notice that this is not a did URL. It's actually just a plain did key identifier, which means that when you dereference this, it's equating to resolving resolving in the same way, in the same manner that I sort of hand wavy explained back here. So when I resolve this identifier, I get something like this, which conveniently means it's a container that has both keys I need at that point in the out of band, when I'm processing the out of band invitation, because two things need to happen here. When I'm processing the out of band invitations, I need to do key agreement with the recipients. And I also need to verify a signature that happens in a subsequent step of the protocol against the ED25519 key encoded here. So that's one way that this decision has affected us. In the case of implicit invitations, which is when we have a didcom service block inside a did document, you have something similar happening. It's essentially the same thing. In did exchange, we also witness the did key here. This example is a bit of a head scratcher. I look at this, and if this were an ED25519 key, then when I resolve this, the result will be that did document that we just saw, where we have both an ED25519 key, and which is basically an authentication key, and also we have a key agreement key. But I guess the point is, by convention, we just choose to say, hey, no, I already know, I just need to use the ED25519 key at this point, resulting, or that is contained when I resolve the did document from this identifier to verify this signature here. So that's fine. Okay. So why would we want to change? So here are some problems. What if I want to use different types of keys? Keys that have no equivalence between them. So what I mean by that is, and I included some examples in the RFC that I proposed. Here's an example. What if I want to use, let's say, P256 keys for key agreement? Sorry, for key agreement. Or what if I want to use, sorry. As you see, I'm not a cryptographer. I think these are actually authentication keys. I would need to look this up again. What if I want to use P256 keys for authentication and keep using these for key agreement? There is no mathematical equivalence between these two. So now I need to encode them separately. But the containers in the protocols only give me one slot. But now I need two.
Can I ask some questions? So in that case, wouldn't you need some other did that allows expression of two keys in one did?
In other words, I will still need to preferably be accurate in my message and say, yes, okay, this is the exact key I want you to use.
Yeah.
Because as you know, dids are containers of, among other things, keys, and they can have several.
So it seems to me, so like in the places we're using it, okay, so the reason we put this in here was in the places we're using it, we have only one entry. So in the case you've got on your screen there, the kid, and then as well, the in the out of band in the recipient keys and those arrays where we've got naked keys, if you will. Where we had naked keys, that meant we didn't know what type of keys it was, so we were just guessing. Yeah. Now we have, we have accurate knowledge of which key it is. If the key type supports all of the things that did key supports, then we can just use did key. The scenario we don't support, even if what we don't support in any case is the one you're talking about, which is that I have to have two keys. The only way that could be done is to publish some other did that has both keys in it in a comparable way to did key, because you can't represent both keys in one single URI basically. So I get what you're saying, but I'm not sure solved by not using did key. In other words, I don't think not using did key solves it.
So one of the things I did not mention this in the proposal or presentation, but one of the things, the common thread here is transmission of naked key values in the message itself.
Yeah.
We do not want to have to resolve the keys to do this crypto. So we definitely do not want to have to resolve a did in some common or accessible ledger or data source in order to fetch the keys. That's one thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like I was saying before, which of those keys would I use?
So it strikes me that the thing, because did key has the ability to encode different key types. What it doesn't have is the ability to actually put two keys in there such that when you turn it into the did document representation, there's actually two.
Correct. With the way things are being currently discussed, as you already know, there's the proposal to have something that would look like a query parameter that you would attach to a did URL that would essentially patch the did key in this case, but that none of that has materialized yet.
So I would actually argue that did key actually leaves you space to do that, because what you could do is if you can get into multi-Kodak a combination. So did key is based on multi-Kodak and those other things. So if you could have a two keys get into that that together provide both types of keys and that have an entry in the multi-Kodak, then you would have
I actually don't think this. I don't think that's the way to solve this problem, because multi-codec is only designed to like encode a single key.
Yeah.
What it seems like the did key method needs is the ability to say, oh, here's my key, and if I provide a second one, it overrides the default use of this key in that role, and here's the new multi-codec encoded value. What that would allow you to do is when you specify did key, you could actually specify two keys that ended up in the resulting document.
Yeah.
And you would be able to control which one actually went where. And it seems like that's where the gap is with did key.
So, yeah, so all of that is great. I guess I'm a little bit, I do have some reservations about even using a did method at all for the purposes that we want to here. But if that were to be done in the did key, then by all means, but once that's done, we can have that conversation. Otherwise, you know, we're still stuck in the place where
I want to inject. Can I inject for a minute here?
Yeah. Okay.
The use of the did key method was a compromise. We never liked it. At least I never liked it. And I was reluctantly talked into it. And I agree it was the right compromise to make for the time. But the reason I was uncomfortable is semantically, the thing we're trying to convey here is not a did, it's a key. Yeah,
I agree.
And so what George is proposing is, if we're trying to talk about a key, let's talk about a key, and we don't use a did method to do it as a crutch.
So, okay, so I agree. I agree with that 100%, Daniel. But I just want to stress that the primary motivator here is are two things. We want to use other key types. We want to use disjoint types of keys. By that I mean basically, you know, I want to mix and match however I please. And we want to manage our authentication keys and key agreement keys separately. So those are like hard requirements for us. But still, okay. At the philosophical level, I fully agree with your point.
So I disagree with Daniel's point because, well, the cases we talk about, which is we want to encourage the use of did key in places where we have naked keys. The nice part about this is you could actually use did key elsewhere and not just in these places. So I think it has value in being able to resolve it as it did and be able to do things and then use did indie and did key in those same places and get access to those attributes. So there are use cases that allow it. And so supporting it that way, we all agree we need some sort of mechanism to know what the key type is. We can't assume we know what the key type is. So a naked key is no good. So I think the compromise is a question of whether we use did key or just use the whatever it's called, multi-codec. What is it called?
Yeah, multi-codec, multi-format.
Okay. And in response, George, to your question is you want to mix and match between the two key types.
For the different purposes.
That means you've got to come up with some other way to express that. And to me, that means it's either got to be something added to multi-codec or something added to did key that allows you to specify a combination within a single URI. Because I think
this is a proposal that works with what we currently have in multi-codec and multi-format, and it sort of eases the transition from did key to this to something else, which is this. But it does require some changes in the out of band in two or three RFCs of ours. And it would look like this. I don't know if you actually took a look at them, but it would look something like this. It's a very simple format. This would just be the Jose algorithm, vertical pipe, and then the same multi-codec, multi-format encoding functions for your key.
So what would routing keys look like?
Routing keys are also key agreement keys, so they would look just like recipient keys.
So you don't need the pair with routing keys because all your...
No. What I was trying to say with that is that they would have a similar format. Or maybe I did not understand your question.
So you've got a recipient keys array, and now you've added an authent keys array.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that those form, hold on, can you go back?
Okay.
So I'm assuming those two form equivalences to one another. Like the same agent, if you will, that has the private key for the recipient key also has that equivalent private key. So if you had two entries in each of these, again, they would be paired, right?
Right.
The keys are not equivalences of each other.
They're not equivalences, yeah. But they're held by the same party and they're to be used on the same messages, right?
So
as a pair.
So they are not necessarily paired like that, But from the mechanics of the protocol, the intention here in this specific example, which is out of band, is that later on you would verify the signature of the DID document in that further stage of the out of band of DID exchange or connections protocol with one of these authentication keys.
Yeah. So one of them would be used to verify the signature. And if I remember correctly, one would be used to decrypt, right? Is that the two uses?
Okay, so whoever is responding to this out-of-band invitation must encrypt for all the recipient keys.
Yeah.
Okay, but then when they are verifying the DID document attachment, which let's say it's a DID exchange response, that DID document attachment will need to have been signed by one of the keys in the authentication keys. Why is it an array? Because the recipient of your response to this invitation will have presumably responded with just one of their devices, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm out of my depth, so I'm going to back off. I'm just worried about how routing keys would look in this case. It's left out. I would include that in the example.
They're just encryption keys.
Because there's
no signature verification for that. It's just encrypted to the mediators.
And that would be less of a problem. I mean, I would be more inclined to try to figure out how to put it either into a DID or either multi-Kodak or DID key to enable storing both.
If you want to stick this in a DID, DID peer already lets you do that.
Yep, it does.
We don't need to extend DID key because all we're doing when we extend DID key is make it more and more like DID peer.
But DID peer would have to be able to have the initialization mechanism, which is being able to string everything together. I mean, DID peer, you would actually include the full DID doc in it because what we're trying to convey here is we're transferring the whole thing that you're supposed to respond to, right? Well, no.
I don't think so. That gets to my thing about semantically what we're trying to convey is a key, not a DID document.
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
Well, to add a little bit more of a wrinkle here, the eventual fuzzy goal is to move in the direction of DIDCOM V2. And in DIDCOM V2, the recipient information is actually carried in headers and is in the format of a DID. So if you are going to create an out-of-band invitation like this, the mechanism actually needs to be in a DID in order to work using that mechanism. So that can result in a couple things. One is we got to go fix V2 because it doesn't handle the case very well. Or we need to standardize on using something like DID peer that is capable of encoding two different key types inside the same document. The reason I bring that up is that if we're going to go that way anyway, and we're trying to motivate that direction, then coming up with a different key representation type for V1 when we're planning to move to a DID encoding of similar material seems kind of silly.
So not sure what to say to that aside from there is some recognition in this, some level of recognition in this proposal that we could evaluate some alternatives, but that just mentions JSON Web Key. My point here is that my hope here is to advance us in this direction in time for AIP 2.0. So if the alternative path that are being brought up here is made a reality by then, I would be happy to adopt them. But I just haven't seen any. And this is also intentionally designed to be as small a step as possible, just to promote easier adoption. It is definitely not, it is not being proposed as an end-all be-all just for the mere fact that multi-codec and multi-formats are not proper standards. Just because of that, that is also mentioned in the RFC proposal.
Hey, can I just share my screen for about 1 minute?
Sure, let me stop. Go ahead.
What I want to share is this diagram, which is from the peer-did spec. And the reason I'm sharing it is because I'm validating what you're doing here. The peer-did spec takes a number and then it runs it through the multi-codec. And then this transform thing that is shown is the multi-format thing. So it's doing exactly the same thing you're proposing. The only difference is that the numeric basis isn't a key. It's a hash of the hash of the initial state of the DID document. But anyway, the point is just this same technique is starting to show up in other places. I think it's pretty much an accident that the spec, the peer DID spec says this, and you're saying the same thing, but it's a happy accident because it means that other people are using the same technique.
Hey, Daniel, before you stop sharing.
Oh, okay.
You mentioned that the DID peer method is already capable of actually having a DID document with two different keys in it. Do you have anything you can show us that would indicate? You may not have an example prepared because this was brought up like 90 seconds ago, but do you have a, do you have any sort of indication about what that would look like or what the state of that work is?
That's been in there for at least a year. It's not new. Let me see if I'm just scrolling down, if I can find a part of the DID document here. Well, so we need to change this from public key to, well, there's actually a public key section and then there's a authorization section. But anyway, there are examples that show multiple keys and they're different formats. So here's an ED25519, a SEC P256 key, and even an RSA key can be included in the same peer DID.
And it's possible to express that all in the form of a DID, meaning if I'm communicating for the very first time with you, I'm able to comprise a string that contains all of that information that, that can resolve out to this document?
Yes.
Intelligently?
Yes.
Is it there in the spec?
No.
This spec includes, so the way that you would do that is you would actually have a, it would be a DID URL that has the initial state parameter.
Which doesn't exist anymore because they got rid of that, didn't they?
They decided not to make it a globally recognized or defined parameter, but it still exists. You can absolutely use it.
Okay, so basically what you're doing though is you're constructing your own DID doc and attaching it to your DID as a URL, as part of the URL.
That's right. DID ends up, instead of being 100 characters long, it might be 1,000 characters long because you're conveying the entire content of the DID document with it.
Yeah, so with differences between that and what we have today, with DID key, you're just encoding the key, and then by convention, expanding that to a full-blown DID document. With Daniel, right. With the DID peer, you have to actually encode the entire DID document.
Yeah, which eliminates any possibility of using, I'm not that fussed by it, but it eliminates any possibility of conveying these by QR codes. You have to use redirections on QR codes because there's no way you'd be able to do that. That was part of the motivation of doing it this way, was A, not to have naked keys, and B, to be keep them concise.
Yeah. So I tried, in my proposal, I tried not to stray away too far from that, but unfortunately, just having to separate the authentication keys from key agreement keys, the right way to go seemed to be to put them in separate attributes.
So what about going, what if we embrace the DID URL mechanism? Does that make it even worse?
I think so. And I think we just discussed this with the DID peer DID method as an example, right? So it would be a really long string And yeah. we're also really complicating the parsing.
All we're conveying is two keys instead of one.
Yeah. All we want to do is convey two keys instead of one. Yes.
Yeah.
It would be relatively easy to also say if the authentication keys are absent, assume they're the same as the encryption keys. And that way it would be an easy transition for the ED25519 keys to do.
Yeah, but that would not that would only so maybe I didn't really understand maybe where you were going. You're talking about a transition. So
well, no, we don't for ED25519 keys, there's a translation into the into the signing key, right? What I'm saying is that if you don't include the signing key and your type is ED25519, that just is also the signing key with the translation, which means that, you know, if you're doing the ED25519 keys, it's a pretty easy change to be able to sort of support this new model with the ability to present both keys and have them not be the same.
Okay, so something along the lines of making this new attribute optional, or for a during a transition period, maybe make it optional. Is that sort of what you're saying?
No, not during a transition, I think forever. You could say if you don't include the authorization key, the spec says that you must be able to derive the authorization key from the recipient key. That's how it works now.
Okay, I guess, right? Sure.
Am I wrong there? I am also not a cryptographer, but you started it saying.
So that, I mean, I guess, sure, it can work. The only thing, it just sounds very, it doesn't sound very uniform. I think this equivalence only, or I've only seen it established or held between ED255 and X25519. I have not seen it with other key types. So it would be...
That's what I'm saying, is that...
It would be an anomaly, you know what I mean?
Yes, the alternative is to have all of us that are currently doing it redundantly include the key. I mean, it would be a slightly different format because we're going to do the translation, but we're going to include basically the information and the information that can be derived again. So... I mean, what I was mentioning there is that you could always say in the absence of this, then you get it from over here, or we just force all of us that are using Edwards curve keys to do double the work. That could work too. And that has the advantage of uniformity.
Oh, the work,
always
the
authorization key.
The work is still being done. I mean, even today, or all agents that have been,
I mean, developer work, not computation work.
It's the same. Well, okay.
So anyway, the larger question that I have, it seems like we could do that. It's a little more terse. I feel sort of a little bit stuck between the terseness of the did key method, which is super, super limited, and we've run into that before, and the did peer method, which is far more capable, but also is not terse for limited use cases.
It is terse for limited use cases. Everybody keeps forgetting this. If you want a did peer to have the terseness of a did key, you just change one character on the front to say, I'm using this convention instead of that for doing the resolution, and you're done. It has exactly the same expansion characteristic as did key does.
Right, except that we don't get the little bit more that we're hoping, which is two keys in there. So we could define another expansion model, right? Which encodes, basically two keys and allows you to specify where the second one is going to override. And we would kind of get what we wanted. We would be terse, but still be able to include two keys. And we happen to be on better terms with the maintainer of the did peer spec. And so we could define another encoding to that, and then we'd be able to use it. I say this half with my didcom v2 hat on, because if we're running into this now, we're going to run into this squarely again in a hurry while needing to solve the same need over there. And so I'm wearing two hats, but I'm trying to figure out how we can solve the problem more generally so that like we have a clean path to the future rather than needing to make one step now and another step later.
I have a question. George, do you have specific use cases that you think are necessary around this? So obviously, we've used ED25519 all over the place, and that's generally where we think, which is why it was okay for quite a while to have a naked key that everyone just assumed was that type of key. In order to move this forward, like, you know, obviously there's the total general case. I want to use any key I want all the time. But do you have a specific pair of keys that you expect to be using, key types that you expect to be using?
Yeah, they are in the JWE RFC, which is one of your topics.
Yeah. Okay. And the idea is all of the ones that are listed in there could be used in any combination, or are there specific combinations that you expect to use?
I can't say for certain on the combinations, but I would think that we would run into scenarios where we are limited to combinations which are basically using just a NIST approved
right. And that's where I thought you were going to go. So
yeah, of course.
Question goes, okay, so now you've got a customer in front of you who says, you must use NIST keys. Which ones would you use? Like, surely it's not any one of them. You would use a specific ones in the common case, right? That's what I'm trying to get to is, there a middle ground that handles certain cases that gets us to DIDCOM V2 in some reasonable way? I'm just exploring the idea. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just exploring.
I'm not even sure I understand 100% of the implications of what you're saying. I don't really understand that. All I can really say is just it depends on the use case.
Seriously? So if you were told by the customer you have to use a NIST key, would you not have a go-to one that you would go to?
I can't really talk about that. As I said, I'm not really a cryptographer. I would ask one of our guys.
Okay.
I have some idea.
P256 is the default, I think. If you don't pick ED25519, usually people pick ED256. That's the standard NIST curve.
That's what I feel like, but thank you. I was not feeling very confident in actually just saying that out.
And so in other words, if we found a use case or if we found a solution that handles that one and ED25519 keys, would we be happy and should we try to find such a thing? I'm just trying to see if we can constrain the size of the problem.
As a comment, as currently defined in the V2 spec, the only curves that we're actually respecting at this point is X25519 and P256. P256 specifically because it's a NIST elliptic curve.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say, Stephen, other than my only comment to your question is that it doesn't seem very... it doesn't seem to imply a lot of cryptographic agility.
I think what we're trying to get after here, and this is the same thing with the V2 spec, is that there is a carrying cost for the number of curves that we are actually expecting the community to employ. And so, if we say, hey, these are the two we're coalescing around, that's a lot easier. If we're saying, hey, there's 19 that we have, then there's a lot more work for all the players involved to support all 19.
Yeah.
So by trying to be narrow as narrow as practical, as prudent in the beginning, it narrows the target for those of us trying to, be interoperable in our communication.
So
I think that's what he's asking is can we narrow this such that there's a smaller target to hit in the beginning, rather than saying we must accept
everything. I understand that argument. I just see it as two separate issues. I would not do any hard coding in the protocols in order to achieve that. That would be a separate concern. That would be just basically a list of agreed upon crypto that we can just plug into this.
Right, but we're saying, you know, the thing we're hard coding is this value here should be a DIG. That's what we're saying in the protocols. And then what we're saying is, oh, if you support DID key, you're likely you're going to be able to support at least 25519. And if you support this other combination, then you're going to be able to support NIST keys. And maybe we can come up with a concise form so that we don't have to go all the way to DID peer, where we have to, where we basically have to pass a URL that has the entire DID doc.
Honestly, it seems like there's a lot of subcontext here that is coming from thinking around V2. I am not privy into that context. Any pointers to the rationale behind why it must be DIDs or DID URLs at certain places in V2? Those references would be very much welcome. I'm just trying to say I'm scratching my head at why the insistence on DIDs instead of just the actual keys for the uses, at least the uses that we have in front of us in V1 at least. Yeah. And I'm not sure about V2. I still haven't seen, I haven't thought about how DID exchange V2 would look like. I know it's sort of like implied, but just haven't worked through the mechanics.
Yeah.
So if someone can point me to some text that describes a rationale for DIDs or DID URLs in V2, that would be awesome.
So I linked you to the spec. That's not as specific as you're asking for just yet. I need to go looking to make sure that's actually in there somewhere that I can point to you specifically. The rationale behind it was a push that I believe was a very excellent push to remove any special case handling for the DID peer method. In V1, we have some special case handling where, you know, to allow a little bit of bootstrapping to occur. And the motivation there was, hey, let's make DID peer worry about itself and come up with a within spec way of representing and handling what's going on here. And that way you can guarantee that the from and the to of any message sent with V2 is just a DID. And the fact that you're passing a DID method that happens to be more of a peer-to-peer one is an entirely separate issue apart from the DID resolution itself. And so that's what's going on, is that when you send a message, you can send it, you know, and when you indicate who it's from, that includes all of the information necessary to then respond to that message. So we do have out of band in DIDCOM V2. We don't actually have DID exchange, because literally any message becomes an exchange of DIDs. So the ability there is that when you want to send a message to someone, instead of sending sort of bootstrapping messages to say, hey, I'd like to talk with you. Okay, let's exchange some stuff. Hey, now here's message X that I really want to send you. You actually just send message X. And in the header information, which includes the from and the to, the pre-processing of that message is able to do all of the work that the previous exchanges actually did. So we're not losing any of the features we had. They just happened by processing the header, the outer context of the message, and then you receive message X and can act upon it. So that's why we got there, and that we haven't had those discussions. Those discussions are months old now, and so we've been proceeding under that pretty cleanly. Another example of that focus is that we decided that since there are DID peer methods or DID methods that can be used anonymously, we're removing support. There's a PR for this right now. We're removing support for a non-crypt inside of DIDCOM V2, because the encryption guarantees are basically the same, except that you don't get to know the identity of the sender. Well, in this case, if you're able to trivially use a fresh identity that no one's ever seen before, then you basically effectively get the same thing without us having to expand the cryptographic coverage of the protocol itself. Does that help? Does that provide any context?
So I guess I just need to sit down and actually think it through. I hear what you're saying, but yeah. So where do we go from here? Meantime, what's the timeline for AIP 2.0, and how do we get to a point where, you know, we can use these P256? Essentially, yeah.
One thing that I'm going to volunteer for, I'll need some help here, but I'll take the first initial stab, is the peer method has different encodings. There's one that mimics DID key, and there's then the one that uses the full DID doc stuff. I'm going to seek to write an additional one, which is a half step between them. It allows the terseness of DID key, but will allow you to override certain keys within the generated DID document with a secondary key if you provide it. And that way we can express two keys in the same DID, if you will. And then we'll have both of them present. I don't think that's going to be super complicated to write, because it's basically a minor reassembly of what's already in there. And of course, that means we would then have to write the code, but we're going to then have to write the code anyway.
You're also going to have to, you're going to have to do that and then circle around back to, I guess, the Aries RFCs and say, hey, the DID document resolved from this must be or must have or must comply with such and such conditions. Only one authentication key and one encryption key, or I don't know, maybe several. I don't know. It would need some clarification on that side as well, on the consumer.
That is the point of DID key. Is DID key says, oh, when you get this, here's the transformation. Because it's just a parlor trick. DID key is such a...
Yes.
It's a parlor trick.
I understand. I agree. It works like that, but not in all the cases that we're interested in. So
I get that.
I know that the DID key folks are uninterested in modifying DID key. That's okay. We have a better one in DID peer.
Well, but... yes and no. DID key allows you to just, here's the key, and now you know what the DID looks like because it's just a text transformation. DID peer is a fully custom DID doc, which is totally needed in many, many cases. This is why I struggle with people.
There's a misunderstanding you have there, Stephen. It can work in two modes. There is a format bit in the beginning, a format character. And right now there are two of them. One says act exactly like DID key. The other one says have a full DID document. I'm proposing we add a third one that says act like DID key, except there's an appended key on the end following the exact same multi-codec stuff that then overrides the right place in inside the DID document when present.
I see. Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
So that's not a huge, crazy, heavy lift, and the code doesn't exist yet because the spec hasn't been written yet. But the code doesn't exist for really any of this yet. We're all in agreement that however we do it, it's going to be super heavily based on multi-codec. So that's not code to write.
That's not, yeah. The one other thing, Sam, that I was going to say was I can shoot an email over to Digital Bazaar to ask, you know, what were you guys thinking when you built this? And, you know, what if you have other than 25519 key, what were you thinking? And just to see if they've thought through this already.
Oh, I'm muted. I would love to see them respond and we'll see. Yeah. I imagine that they, based on our previous interactions, they're going to be quite reluctant to any modifications at all.
When I talked to them about that, I was trying to find a way to find a middle ground between DID peer and DID key, and they didn't want to modify DID key. They wanted it to be simple, kind of the same way that Sam wrote basic message as a protocol that was deliberately simple. Maybe they've changed since then, so it'd still be worth asking them. But yeah, they did.
It seems to me if DidKey only supports, you know, 25519 keys, then it's pointless. you don't need anything.
It doesn't.
It
supports other key types in the spec. What it doesn't support is the inclusion of two keys in the same DID key that end up in the DID document in different places. That's what it doesn't support.
It supports only keys that allow for the generation of the two types.
They have examples with other ones, but I don't exactly know what they mean by those.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
So yeah, if you're willing to reach out to them, Stephen, that would be super useful. I'll put together.
I wanted to pursue this. What is the key combination that you want to support in addition to ED25519 and X25519? Because that's the use case that I want to ask Manu about, which is if you have to support NIST keys with this, what would you do? Then maybe I'll just ask it that way.
That's a good question.
I can, I can ask. I can just verify this real quick. What are we most interested in out of
George, and then I'll follow up. I'm glad to follow up with Manu. And
hey, will you share that on the Ares channel, George, when you get that?
Yeah.
Sure.
Because I'll use that as a target too when I'm proposing what we do.
Sure.
Okay. So this discussion has been fantastic. We are at 2:30. And so that means the end of our discussion is done for the week. Please take this to Rocket Chat and let's share stuff and figure this out. This has implications not only for AIP2, but one way or the other, it has an implication on DIDCOM V2 as well. And so I'm highly interested in trying to figure out how we can accommodate this need, because it's a super valid need and we need to make sure that we can handle this. So thanks everybody for coming. I will post the recording I hope your week is a good one.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks, guys. Bye. See you.